Information-fueled, opinion-driven. This is the Dan Mandis Show, Super Talk 99.7.
206 on Super Talk 99.7 WTN. Dan Mandis Show. Appreciate you being here talking about all kinds of things today, including the rise of white nationalism. Want to welcome on in Dr. Carol Swain. And, Doctor, appreciate you joining us. You are one, sorry, on Fox News today. Very nice, by the way. So, you are one of the foremost authority on the rise of white nationalism. As a matter of fact, you wrote a book a couple of many years ago now, The New White Nationalism in America, Its Challenge to Integration. That was 2002, which was nominated for a Pulitzer Prize. And you also wrote Contemporary Voices of White Nationalism in 2003. And, Doctor, I appreciate you joining us from Vanderbilt University. So let's talk a little bit about white nationalism. Then we're going to get into what we saw over the weekend. But talk about white nationalism for us. Is it on the rise in America today?
I think that white consciousness and white identity is on the rise. And there are people who are very angry that's been galvanized by the attack on the Confederate symbol. And so there are a lot of people who probably would be totally indifferent on racial issues, but these people feel under attack, and they have pretty much, the political left has united to a large extent different kinds of organizations and different kinds of groups.
Let's talk about, and if you could do me a favor, Doctor, and speak right into the phone. Let's talk about what exactly is white nationalism. I'd like to define it because it seems to me like there is a difference between, say, for example, white nationalism and some of these other things like white supremacy and so forth. And so let's talk about what white nationalism is.
Well, first of all, my definitions come from research I conducted in the late 1990s, early 2000s, and I made a distinction between the old-style white supremacists, or white supremacists of the KKK, the neo-Nazis, the World Church of the Creator, Christian Identity, which is a racist organization that's not really Christian because they argue that blacks and Jews are non-human. Those people, I would argue, are minuscule percentage of the population. I certainly hope they're not growing. I refer to the new white nationalism as a movement that included people who were well educated. These were individuals who were upset about racial double standards, multiculturalism. They had policy concerns when it came to affirmative action. There was race-based. They were opposed to liberal immigration. They were concerned about minority crime, and they were concerned about globalization and loss of jobs. Those are legitimate issues that many of them are raised that should be discussed in public policy forums. The key difference that I saw between white supremacists and white nationalists is that the white nationalists were making the case that white people had rights like other groups, that they were being discriminated against, and that no one cared. And these people were more likely to support their arguments using social science data, FBI statistics, science, to put forth a case of that was designed to persuade. And so I saw that as something that could resonate with a lot of people, and certainly our youth who notice inconsistencies. They notice double standards. And so that's the main distinction. I call them the new white nationalism to separate them from the old-style white supremacists. Sure. One group was using intellectualism. They did not fit the stereotype of the Klansmen with the missing teeth, the beer gut, that we see on TV.
One of the things that I have found interesting over the past certainly 48 hours, but there's been a long-going issue, is that the media is trying to, and I know that you are incredibly in tuned to the hijinks and shenanigans of the mainstream media, because you and I have spoken about this, Dr. Carol Swain, and that is that the media is trying to portray and connect those that are white nationalists and those that are also part of the neo-Nazis and white supremacy. They're trying to connect that with overall Trump supporters and with Republicans and conservatives. Do you see this as something that the media is going to be able to get away with?
Well, I mean, they seem to be getting away with it because they take this broad brush.
Yes.
And they include, you know, when they take this brush out, they include the far right, the neo-Nazis, the Klan, the alt-right, which I would call the new white nationalism, and then everyday men and women that are trying to make a living, who may have voted for Donald Trump. They're putting all of them in the same basket and calling them white supremacists, telling churches they need to condemn the white supremacists in their churches. And I think that is inappropriate. I believe that there's some legitimate issues that many Americans have concerns about. And it so happens in this era of political correctness that if you're white and you raise concerns about immigration, welfare, minority crime, police brutality, or even support the police, if you don't have the politically correct position, you're going to be labeled as a racist and a white supremacist. And I think that's a way to shut people down. I also believe that it is backfiring, and it's backfiring in a way that's very dangerous for our country because it's pushing individuals into the ranks of others that are more extreme.
And this is coming not only, Doctor, from the left, but it's also coming from folks like David Duke. Now, he was quoted over the weekend. I think this was on CNN. This is what David Duke had to say about the rallies in Charlottesville, Virginia. Go ahead and play that audio.
This represents a turning point for the people of this country. We are determined to take our country back. We're going to fulfill the promises of Donald Trump. That's what we believed in. That's why we voted for Donald Trump, because he said he's going to take our country back, and that's what we got to do.
All right, so, Doctor, in case you couldn't hear that, basically—
I did hear it, and I think that David Duke is like a charlatan, and that he would do anything for money, and it wouldn't surprise me if he weren't taking money from the Democrats. So that's my interpretation of David Duke.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Earlier today I said two words, David Duke, don't help, and because he is. You're exactly right. He's playing right into the hands of the Democrats and the mainstream media. It's like he's some sort of a double secret agent
foolish.
Or something.
He knows exactly what he's doing, and the Democrats are well-known I mean, the political left, I don't want to paint all the Democrats with the broad brush, but strategically, having someone like him make those kind of statements feeds into the narrative that the political left has painted. At the same time, given what we know about the Democratic Party and Hillary Clinton and how leftist it is, it's not reasonable to think that the average, you know, white person that's conservative or who's concerned about race would ever support a Democrat. They're going to support a Republican every time, and it doesn't mean that Republican is racist. It means that they don't have an alternative. They're not going to vote for the Democrats. They could stay home, but if they're going to vote at all, they will vote for the Republican Party, because that Republican Party, at least its platform, stands for tradition, God, country, and family.
Dr. Carol Swain joining us from Vanderbilt University. And, Doctor, one of the other things that I found fascinating about this whole thing is the rise of this group known as Antifa or Antifas. And basically, they're anti-fascist, right? And so over the weekend, we had this white nationalist demonstration that I'm assuming would have been peaceful had it not been for these anti-fascists as they were coming up and physically threatening, I guess you would say, and to the point where they were throwing things at the white nationalists, and the white nationalists and the neo-Nazis started to retaliate. And so we had a number of different groups that are fighting each other. As it relates to this weekend's demonstrations, do you think that the white nationalists, was their demonstration, do you perceive that as one that was the goal and the intention was that it was supposed to be peaceful, but then it was hijacked by the neo-Nazis and then the anti-fascists got involved and all heck broke loose?
Well, go back to the Trump rally, how we found out that George Soros was paying instigators to go to those rallies and to pick fights with Trump supporters, to infiltrate the rallies for the purpose of creating scenes.
Yep.
And so it's the same old tactics.
Yep.
Nothing has changed. And so when you look at what happened in Charlottesville, you have to hold the counter protesters equally responsible, because I don't believe that the people who went there to protest the removal of the Southern Monument went there, you know, to create acts of violence or to harm anyone. But once the counter-protesters show up and the police refuse or decide that they're not going to divide the different forces, you can expect that there will be violence. And then the media and everyone, they spin it in such a way that it's all one group's fault. I think that there was a lot of responsibility that could be shared, that you had people that I believe from Black Lives Matter, or you had protesters from some of the black organizations, as well as Antifa, and then this whole, not just one particular group. I mean, I think there were extreme right forces there, that you, yep. the Klansmen, the neo-Nazis, as well as the people that I call the new white nationalists. They call themselves the alt-right. And you probably had just some regular people there who were concerned about the monument. They happen to be white, and everyone gets painted in a particular kind of way. There was responsibility that can be shared.
Dr. Carol Swain joining us, final moments here. Doctor, congratulations are in order, because after, what is it, 18, 19 years, whatever it's been at Vanderbilt University, this is your last week at Vanderbilt. I know this is
my last day. I mean, tomorrow is my last day, and I've been teaching 28 years, 10 at Princeton and 18 at Vanderbilt.
Okay, so congratulations. Talk about the difference that you've seen over the last 20, 25 years, 30 years, as you've been teaching. Talk about the changes that you've seen in college institutions over the years.
Well, first of all, I have to say that I have not been conservative all of my time in academia. I've always seen the world differently and had research that some people found provocative. But I was a Democrat up until 2009. What I have seen happen is that the faculty members who were more conservative, they were older for the most part, and as they have retired, they have been replaced by people who are very leftist. And I've seen the university go from being a diverse marketplace of ideas, from that kind of learning environment, to one where if you're not in tune with what the institution says is right, they have a position of their own, and if you're not in tune, you're very much an outsider. You're very much marginalized. And I think that higher education is in a crisis, that we no longer teach critical thinking. We teach students what to think, not how to think.
Yeah, and that is a great point. And I think with the rise of, say, for example, safe spaces and all these other things that we've seen that have risen out of the collegiate the colleges across America, this is definitely something that as parents here in Middle Tennessee are looking at sending their kids to college. This is something that I know a lot of parents, and certainly a lot of conservative parents, when they're writing that check, they're thinking, is this what I'm getting for my money? Do you see the colleges turning it around very quickly? Do you see the colleges turning it around?
No, not unless the parents turn around what they're doing. For one thing, the parents that are writing some of those checks to send their kids off to those institutions are sending their kids into an environment where they will be desired. When they come back by Thanksgiving, some of them will be hardly recognizable. And it's sad because you have family wealth that may have been built up over generations from people who have long traditions of faith, and their children come back as atheists. And so I think parents need to make sure that children are prepared for that environment, but they also need to hold institutions accountable. There's no way that students can be educated in a safe space. It's not preparing them for life after college. It's a very artificial environment, and it does work against the interests of certain people in a way that marginalizes Christians, conservatives, and non-liberal whites.
Doctor, so it's your last final days here on at Vanderbilt University. I know that you are somebody who I saw in Fox News this morning. You've written so many books, articles, everything else. What are your future plans?
I plan to continue writing and speaking and visiting, you know, university campuses. I am busier now than ever before.
And I think that your influence as you travel across the country and focus on writing books, your influence is just going to grow. And I wish you luck in your retirement, Dr. Carol Swain. It is 2:22 on WTN.